Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 150 in the series entitled Summation of the Tanya, Chapters 26 through 53. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the month of Nisan 5762.
Good evening. Now we're going to present a brief summary of the second half of Tanya. In last lesson, when we celebrated the Siyum, I gave a brief summary of the first 25 chapters of Tanya. So now I will continue and present a brief summary of the final chapters from 26 and on. In Perek Chavav of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe established his premise that joy and enthusiasm are critical components in a person's life. Because just as in martial arts or in all forms of wrestling and fighting, victory is reserved not necessarily to the one who is stronger, but to the one who is more alert and lively and in a good mood, versus defeat, which is reserved for the person who's sluggish and lethargic and heavy and lazy and in a bad mood. The same is true in the spiritual battle of life. Victory is reserved not for the one who is necessarily stronger, not necessarily for the one who's stronger, but for the one who is besimcha, who is happy, who is joyous. Hence, the critical importance of joy, of enthusiasm, of passion in life, what he calls happiness, an open heart, a pure heart, without worries, without depression, without sluggishness. And he begins to discuss the two major reasons why people are sad and unhappy in this world, and he gives advice how to deal with it. The first is, of course, the stress and the worries that come from physical misfortune, whether in areas of finances, health, life, or the opposite of it, children, and so on and so forth. And his advice there is a profound meditation about understanding what is the meaning of pain. The second cause for sadness is depression or sadness that comes from spiritual misfortune. When a person becomes cognizant of their mistakes, of their sins, of their transgressions, and they're overtaken by guilt, which burdens them. And there the Alter Rebbe warns how this guilt we must deal with and confront in very strong terms. Whether the guilt comes while we're davening or learning, or the guilt comes in the middle of work, and you have to designate a particular time when you're going to contemplate your mistakes and sins. And at other times, one must try to maintain a feeling of openness and joy and passion. In chapter 27, he explores another reason for people's sadness, not guilt over sins or transgressions, but rather the sadness that comes from the realization of how much evil they have in them and how much they have to struggle with. So many people have to constantly deal with alien thoughts and grotesque cravings and appalling ugly instincts and habits. They may not fall prey to it, but the very struggle against these thoughts and passions and feelings could often demonstrate to a person how lowly he or she is and put us in a state of sadness. And here the Alter Rebbe presents a powerful meditation about expectations in life, how often our expectations are coming from arrogance when we expect to have only pure thoughts, to have no struggles in our inner soul. And the Alter Rebbe explains at length how many people have to understand that it's possible that the very purpose and raison d'etre of their existence was to struggle against the evil within and the evil without. And the tremendous explosion of holiness that is generated each time we experience in our mind a thought that is immoral and unethical, and we throw away, we push away this thought, the tremendous explosion of holiness that occurs as a result often constitutes the objective of a person's creation, one that certainly should not put us into despair. In 28, he discusses the negative thoughts, the ugly cravings, alien instincts that fall into a person's mind while he's trying to pray or she's trying to daven, which can often cause a depression and make us feel that all of our davening and our spiritual experiences are in vain. They're futile, they're worthless. Look, you may be in the middle of a prayer, and here you are experiencing such a evil thought. And the Alter Rebbe says here that it's actually on the contrary. When we realize that a man's life consists not of one soul operating in the body, but rather life is a tale of two souls, we operate on two levels of consciousness, then we realize that it's actually on the contrary. When you're wrestling, when your foe sees that he's being defeated, he musters more strength in order to defeat you. When the animal beastly consciousness sees it's being defeated during davening, it accelerates its own strength to defeat the divine soul. Hence, we experience these ugly thoughts in the middle of davening, not because our davening is ineffective, because it's very effective. And the Alter Rebbe gives us the solution of how to continue davening under these circumstances. 29 explores another condition called timtum halev, which is when the heart becomes literally plugged. We become unmoved, desensitized, uninspired. Our heart becomes dull. And the Alter Rebbe says one in such a situation can't daven. They can't open their heart to davening. Nor can a person in such a situation combat their yetzer hara, their evil inclination, and sanctify their lives in those areas that are even permissible. For this you must have inspiration, and this person is totally uninspired. And here he presents the advice of a log which cannot catch on, which the fire cannot catch onto the log, and the log must be splintered. And here, the ego has to be splintered. The ego has to be put in its place. And the Alter Rebbe presents a whole exercise, mental exercise, a verbal exercise, of how the person deflates the ego, which through its chutzpah has inflated itself and totally eclipses the light of the soul and doesn't allow the passage of any flow of inspiration from the soul into the mind and into the heart, and hence this ego must be deflated. Chapter 30 presents another exercise to rid ourselves from timtum alev, from a plugged heart, and that is the fulfillment of the statement of the Mishnah that you have to be humble in the presence of every person. And the question, of course, is how could you really be humble in the presence of people whom you know that their behavior is inferior to yours? The choices they make in life, you would never make those choices. And the Alter Rebbe discusses at length how each and every human being must appreciate the fact that if you or I would have been in the other person's shoes, if we would have experienced their background and their struggles, if we would know what they go through, we may have fallen just like them and maybe even worse. In fact, if we compare the nature of their struggle to the nature of our struggle, we might discover something very interesting, that those areas in our life where we have to put up a fight similar to the fight they have to put up in their areas of life, we may not be doing better. In fact, our knowledge and our scholarship only challenges us much more with the question, why aren't we being victorious in that level of effort and toil where they are not being victorious? And thus, the truth is that in front of every person, if you maintain the proper perspective, you could really feel humble. You never develop a feeling of holier than thou, of I'm really superior to you. Yes, this person's behavior may be wrong and they are responsible for it. But does that mean that I am inherently holier and superior to them? Not at all. Chapter 21 explores the fact that when a person meditates on all of these above concepts to deflate the ego, their humbleness in the presence of every person, they might come to a sense of sadness. And the Alter Rebbe says they should not worry about that. And he gives here a four-rung approach of how to deal with it. Number one, sometimes you have to fight fire with fire. You have to crush the klipa through its own means. And hence, when the person meditates on their lowly condition and experiences a type of atzvos, it's breaking fire with fire. Step two, this is not really sadness, this is frustration. Sadness causes you to go to sleep. Frustration wakes you up to change. Number three, the Alter Rebbe brings out, from this the person needs to move on to a feeling of joy, realizing that despite his or her remoteness from God, at that very moment they have a soul, a divine soul which has been incarcerated, and they have the opportunity at this very moment to take out their soul from spiritual and psychological incarceration and bring back the little beautiful child to its father in heaven through Torah and through mitzvahs. And even if you look at yourself and your body or your physical and animal self seems so lowly, your soul is precious enough to celebrate the very joy of it returning to its God, returning to Hashem through Torah, through davening, and through mitzvahs. So the lowliness of the person should not just throw him into sadness. On the contrary, this demonstrates how remote he is and thus the great joy that the soul experiences when it touches God. And the Alter Rebbe then presents the fourth component of this chapter, that the person has to also realize that he did not make himself. And it's the creator of the world who took his own light and placed it into what he calls the heart of the snake, because the objective of life is to elevate the body, to elevate the animal soul, and thus the struggle need not to put a person into depression, but realizing that this is part of God's intention, he or she experiences a renewed joy. Chapter 32 explores the idea of how the above-mentioned meditations allow a person to truly fulfill the mitzvah of Ahavas Yisrael, of loving another Jew like you love yourself. Apparently that is impossible. How could you love somebody else like you love yourself? So the Alter Rebbe explains, when you give supremacy to your soul over your body, when your soul becomes the primary factor in your life, then you can really love another Jew like you love yourself. As long as you're in love only with your body, the love to somebody is always dependent on something, it's conditional. But when you truly come to love your own soul, to appreciate your own soul, then this is the way to love every other Jew, because when you appreciate what a soul is, you could never estimate the greatness of another Jewish soul. All souls are connected. All souls are one. All souls have one father. All of us are brothers. In bodies we are divided, in souls we are one. And hence, when I come to love my soul, I automatically love your soul, which is why Hillel said that love is the whole of Torah. Because all of Torah comes to teach us transcendence of soul over body. Every mitzvah comes to help us get in tune with another aspect of our soul. So all of Torah is really a commentary on love. All of Torah teaches us how to live with our soul, which is the path, the exclusive path to a genuine love, where you love the other person not only for your ulterior motives, not only for what they do to you, but you really love the other person. Because when you're in touch with the soul, my soul and your soul are one. I love you like I love myself, because on a soul level we are one. The Alter Rebbe then discusses the various halachas about people we are permitted to hate because of their sins, and explains that even for those, there is still the mitzvah of love. In chapter 33, the Alter Rebbe presents another meditation to inspire joy in a soul, especially when the person feels the need at certain times to refine the soul and illuminate it with the joy of the heart. And this is by reflecting on the true concept of Achdus Hashem, of Hashem's unity. That the entire world is essentially an embodiment of God's energy, God's words. Every single person and object and existence in the world is invigorated and animated each moment by divine energy, by divine words. And these very divine words are submerged at that very moment in the essence of Hashem. Unlike human words which leave the speaker, God's words never leave the speaker. So these letters which invigorate the whole world at every moment are always encompassed and submerged in the intimacy of Hashem, which means that at every single moment we could realize that we're absolutely one with God's intimate essence without any separation. And this awareness which we celebrate each day when we say Ashreinu Matoiv Chalkeinu, Umanoyim Gairaleinu, Mayafu Yerushaseinu, is sufficient to inspire a person towards Torah and mitzvahs with tremendous joy. In chapter 34, the Alter Rebbe continues this and says how this was the level of the Avos, the patriarchs, and Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Jewish people at Sinai, who all experienced this level of God's unity. And when we realize this, and we realize that we cannot maintain this consciousness in our life, the person could, however, realize that each day he can create a space, an oasis in his life in which this level of truth and reality is manifested by setting aside time each day for study of Torah and by designating part of our money for tzedakah, for charity. So essentially in the last 9 chapters, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, the Alter Rebbe presented his ideas on joy versus depression. Beginning in chapters 26, explaining the critical need for joy and dealing with the various emotions that can obscure or plug the joy, he goes on in 27 and 28, 29, etc., till 30 through 34, of giving us different perspectives and meditations and exercises and ways of working with ourselves in order to live a life saturated with openness, with simcha, with joy, and with a purity of heart.